The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another K4 Wins. Kai Gregory's been doing this for three or four decades. Been playing both sides of the ledger for a long period of time. Knows what he's talking about when it comes to handicapping. Kip Kiefer, Executive Director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, down there in the lower left-hand corner. And, of course, savant of all things radio and television. I also have a TV show called The Starting Lineup, which we're looking forward to doing this weekend. We'll be down to a final four by the time we get to our show on Saturday. And, of course, by the time we do our show on Friday here at 10 o'clock Central. And there's Case Kiefer. Couldn't do it without him, man. He is the man. He is at Point Zero right there in Las Vegas from the Las Vegas Sun. Writes great blogs, great articles, and has won many awards on his picking prowess as well. He does fantastic. Gentlemen, good morning to you. We got three games here as we record this show on the 30th. We got five games coming up on the 31st, should I say. Then, of course, the three big dogs coming up on January 1st. We'll be down to our final four. We have Ravens Steelers for all the marbles. I'm loving that. We got Bucks, Panthers, a couple of games. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Steelers actually catching 3.5 at home. Look out for that. Bucks giving up 2.5 at home. So a lot to get into this morning. But how's everyone doing? And I will start with Case. Case, there is a brand new best odds player to win the NFL MVP, and his name is
Drake May.
May right now has got best odds to win the Super Bowl. Or not the Super Bowl MVP, but the MVP. He could be able to win Super Bowl MVP. MVP of the National Football League. What was his numbers at the beginning of the season? You have to have that off the top of your head.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but I do think they've gotten so much better with quarterbacks about this and just realizing the way the award's gone. I mean, back in the, what was it, only 7 years ago, like Lamar Jackson, you could have got like 200-1 the year before his MVP season. So I think even a guy like Drake May that was further down the list, I'd be shocked if you get any better than 50-1, and maybe it was like 30 or 35 by the time it went off. And yeah, he's just been so steady right behind Matthew Stafford for the last month and a half, 2 months. But obviously Stafford with the three picks last night, Drake May overtakes him. And man, it kind of reminds me of the Heisman Trophy this year, because I do think right now I'd probably vote Drake May. I mean, numbers-wise, he's been by far the best. But I have that little nagging thing in my head that the Patriots have just gotten the luckiest schedule ever. He's had such an easy schedule, so I do think he deserves it, but it's tough. It's just not a super compelling MVP race. Even if Stafford won, I don't think he's at the level of some of these past MVPs. And it's kind of like the Heisman in that, although I thought Fernando Mendoza was the clear choice and definitely the best college football player in the nation this year, I do think the Heisman, there wasn't like a total, he wasn't as outstanding as past winners. So both I guess the outliers have both kind of come to the field in both NFL and college football this year.
By the way, I wanted to give you props, as I always do, on our confidence bowl. You sent me all the straight up winners. You didn't give me any confidence because I didn't ask for them. And so I didn't know what to do as far as in the point values. I remember the Pure Prairie League team that I ended up getting beat on. I had like a 42 on it. They Amy totally screwed me over. But Tony Curry, number 3, and Santo Curry, number 2, out of 50. Today we have Louisiana Tech, we have Tennessee, and we have USC. I've got USC quite large. Let's get into those three games because they all go off at 1 o'clock, 4:30 later on tonight. Kai Gregory, where are you seeing most of the action on those three games here as we get set for a Final Four coming this weekend?
There is a lot of action that I have seen, believe it or not, which I think is crazy. The public's all over La Tech. I mean, Coastal Carolina's coach is gone. You know, two of their best offensive line starters are gone. Lot of movement there, but La Tech has more people out. Their top two quarterbacks, their top corner, their top two safeties, their top two defensive linemen and linebackers are out. So kind of ridiculous. Tennessee, so far, most everything's been Illinois and towards the over that I've seen, which makes sense when people look at all the people that are out for Tennessee. And everything is still 50-50 with USC and TCU that I've seen so far.
Yeah, that Tennessee-Illinois game, obviously you have a lot to play in that because you're a huge Tennessee fan, giving up 3.5 and 61.5, the over-under, it's way up there. What's your thoughts? Because you've played against Tennessee many times this year, and so you're very good at not being so biased on your big orange, but what are your thoughts on that? And again, with all these players in and out, it is so difficult to figure out who the hell to play, particularly in that first ball game. But what's your likes on the Tennessee-Illinois game at 4:30?
Illinois looks like they're missing three starters, an offensive tackle, a defensive lineman, and a safety, which may or may not, you know, make a big difference. Tennessee, everybody's talking about, okay, well, Tim Banks is gone. I'm not sure that hurts Tennessee right now because they didn't tackle worth a shit anyway. So the defenses that he's been calling that have given up what it used to be called third and Chavis at Tennessee whenever it was third and 10 or more because he gave them up. Well, it's changed to third and Banks because if you've got 8 yards or more to go against Tennessee, don't worry. The defensive backs are going to play 10 yards off the ball and give you the 9 yard out. And let's get the first down. But they're missing, you know, Lewis is going to be out. Chris Brazel, everybody's like, okay, well, that's a huge loss. Actually, Braylon Staley's been playing much better for Tennessee late in the year. Kitzelman's out, but the tight end, but Davis is playing. Offensive guard Wendell Moe's out. Joshua Joseph has opted to the NFL. Best defensive lineman, Jackson Moy, another defensive lineman's not playing. Leading tackler, Arian Carter's not playing. Top cornerback coming back, Colton Hood's not playing. Say all that to say this, over. I'm not playing anything. I'm just playing the over. Tennessee's defense is probably going to give up 30 points, so they're going to have to score at least 34 to win if they win. As a Tennessee fan, I want them to win. I like Tennessee's over in the first half, 16.5. I like Illinois' over 13.5. I like over 30.5 in the first half. I like over 61 for the game. Illinois over 27.5 for the game, and Tennessee over 33.5 for the game.
And Kip, by the way, the transfer portal also opens this week, man. We got 3 games going on today. I know you're a little tired. You've been up since 3 o'clock this morning. The holidays are always huge for you because you're not the fill-in guy. You are the guy, period. Everyone calls Kip Kiefer whenever they're on vacation, so they know the show is not going to be bad at all. Usually you have some, usually they do a best of show, but there's nothing better than a Kip Kiefer show at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning when you're on. Doing the stuff, whether it's on Jocks or whether it's on Talk 99.5 or television or anything else. But you got 3 games to kind of wipe, but I imagine you're going to hit the couch today, and I'm going to actually come over and see you and watch some football with you on Thursday. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Looking forward to that. With the Thursday lineup is awesome. You know, I got cast last time we did a show as Negative Nancy. I don't like that, but what you guys just described is really the indictment of this whole bowl season outside the playoffs, because you don't know who's going to play. You don't know who's already signed to go somewhere else that has no real interest in playing. You don't know who's going to be coaching. There's just too many unknowns. It's just like guesswork. And maybe there's a science to this. Maybe Case can bring me back to the bright side from the dark side. But I have had a hard time getting enthusiastic about the quote non-playoff bowl season. And last time, like I say, I got some blowback from people that, because, you know, I know the popular sentiment is, well, football of any kind is better than anything else. But I just can't help but be a little bit jaded because I just don't like the instability of the whole thing.
My biggest thing, too, is and I'm so glad I was going to go down to Protective yesterday and watch that ball game at 1 o'clock. Something told me to keep my warm ass at home under my blankie. It was 35 degrees. By looking at television, it looked like they had a couple thousand people down there. And it was one of the most boring bowl games I've ever seen between two teams that hate each other. All I heard about was that they take hate to another level, and it's a hate bowl. It's the hate bowl. It's the hate bowl. And they've seen each other 4 times this year, and I'm like, whatever. And it was nothing. There was nothing but love in that game. It was boring to watch. I will say that it's better than watching, you know, a rerun of a Lifetime Christmas movie, I guess, Case. But you're in the business, man. And so whenever you've got something up, I mean, the more games, the better. I still think it's fascinating because you still see matchups you just don't normally see. To see Tennessee play Illinois is kind of cool, and USC TCU, I think it's just kind of fun. I will say that I don't sit down and, you know, I'm not going to have my TV dinner sitting in front of me later on tonight and watch that USC start to finish, but I will be tuning in a little bit.
TV dinner.
Yeah, I mean, I still love it from a handicapping, from a betting perspective. I get like watching the games. I totally agree. The product's not as good and everything. But, you know, trying to handicap motivation, who wants to be there? Like, that's always just been part of bowl season. And it's always another intangible. And then as far as who's not going to play or who is going to play, you just have to be willing to do the work. I mean, it's all out there. College football has good reporting. This all comes out before the games. I mean, so I could get, you know, the frustration from, I guess, if you're just tied to doing it recreationally and you just want to, like you said, get under the blanket, plop down on the couch and say, okay, who am I betting in this game? And you just bet based on what's happened this year. That's just not the equation. I mean, you got to stay up to date on who's going to play, who's going to not. And, you know, a lot of times the market is slow to these. So if you can get ahead of them, I mean, you can just get some absolutely amazing numbers. You can get much better closing line value than you can all throughout the season. Now, it doesn't always work. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I feel like I took one of the worst beats of my college football betting career, I think, 2 or 3 days ago. It's North Texas let San Diego State score with 1 second left. They had a 22-point lead with 10 minutes left. Mestemaker ended up playing. I had North Texas -3. They closed 7.5 and just destroyed them until the very end. So, you know, nothing's foolproof, but if you're looking at it from a gambling perspective, and complaining, I just feel like you're not trying hard enough, because there are amazing opportunities betting wise. From a television product, though, I totally agree. It's just, I mean, even the quality of games are so down, and it's not what it once was.
I will say this, and I saw a kid from App State yesterday on one of our local TV stations in tears. They had won 5 games this year. They're playing in a bowl game at 5-7. Obviously, they lost to Georgia Southern. He was in tears, so happy that he got to play one more game. And I got to tell you, man, it hit my heartstrings, man. I was like, this kid will never play organized football again. Anywhere. He's played 4 years. He was their wide receiver. And he's like, listen, I know I'm not going to be playing the National Football League, but man, just to get out there with my guys one more time and suit it up and strap them up, get out there and play some football and get our ass beat. They finished the season 5-8. So for guys like that, you know, I'm happy for you. That's great. And it does take up some time on television, because there's some crap out there as well. Let's get into the games coming up here. We're going to start on New Year's Eve, Miami and Ohio State.
Hold on. Before you go any further, I want to see what they think about Tennessee, Illinois.
Okay.
Tennessee's my only bet today. I think I might have mentioned it previous on the show, but I laid it on the money line -130. Obviously, I don't think it's quite that good anymore. I would still lay the 3. I like the matchup for them. The other two games today, I don't have anything on, to be honest. So Tennessee for me.
Kip,
what do you like? What about the totals?
I did not have anything on the total, but you made a good enough case for the over. I certainly am never I'm never rushing to bet unders when Tennessee's involved.
Tony, you know what the over unders are? On bowl games.
Yeah, all unders.
Like, I mean,
18 unders so far.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been crazy. It sucks for people. And I'm glad, because I love playing overs, and I would have gotten bludgeoned this year in the bowl season. I am so glad that I've laid off a little bit. I'm going to jump back in here when some of the big games come. You mentioned that Tennessee Illinois line 61.5, and interesting enough, now we can jump into the Miami Ohio State 40.5. That's kind of amazing. I think a lot of that's based on the fact that Ohio State only put up 10 against Indiana. Probably this last time, Miami's defense is getting better and better week in and week out. And there's Miami. And I want to call them the sexy pick, because they're a 9.5-point dog case. But I mean, there's a lot of people who think they have a shot at going all the way. And here's Ohio State. Who are we going to see? Are we going to see the team that played against Indiana? I've looked on that game up and down as often as I possibly could, despite the fact there were 23 total points. But I think everyone thought that was somewhat of an anomaly for the Buckeyes.
The total's crazy low. Not something I bet, but I think I would have to go over to just off of principle. It kind of feels similar to Alabama, Oklahoma when I got that low. I just felt like, I mean, we know both these teams have the talent on offense, so I would lean over. I haven't bet it. I did bet some Miami +10, as I mentioned last time. I keep thinking it'll get back to 10, but it hasn't. We're actually seeing some 9 today, so I would still sit patiently and hope to get the 10. But it's just, I don't know. Those two things don't seem aligned to me. We keep getting money on the under. And then the spread kind of feels the same. If it's really going to be that cagey and Miami's going to lean on the strategy they did the second half against Texas A&M and just pound it with Fletcher. I mean, we already know. I don't love the way Ohio State's called their offense, but all year they've been that way too. They haven't wanted to take many chances. They've just wanted to, rely on Sayan's accuracy, and then later in the year, Bo Jackson in the running game. So if it's really going to be that type of game, then I definitely don't think it should be this big of a spread. I am fascinated to see how it turns, because if you remember, Ohio State was guilty of that last year too during the regular season. They really turned it on, went pace in the playoffs. It wasn't only that they looked great in the playoffs, they kind of changed their whole approach. So I'd be interested to see if they do it again. I feel like I keep repeating myself, but I think there's no doubt that Personnel-wise, Ohio State has the best personnel in the tournament. I mean, they just have NFL guys at basically every position. But I really think Miami might be the second most talented team just in terms of personnel and guys that are going to be playing on Sundays. I think the one area where Ohio State might be somewhat mediocre or relatively not that great is the offensive line. And I think Miami's defensive line is just absolute nails with Bain and all those guys. I feel like they could have a plus matchup there. So at such a huge spread, I would have to take Miami, and it's just gotten low enough to where I lean the over as well.
Kip, I know who you're going to be siding with this particular game. And of course we have a good friend of ours who's a huge Miami fan. And I know he's very, very happy to actually have his team playing in the postseason for the first time. It seems like in forever, but yeah, that 9.5 looks like a big number, man. When I see a number that big, this deep into the playoffs, normally I'm thinking you're begging me to take Miami and buy it to the 10. And so I usually take the other side. Is it going to bite me in the ass?
You know, I don't know. Ohio State, I think it's no secret that I'm not a big Big Ten guy, especially now, because I just don't think the league is very good. And I've been critical of Indiana's schedule, but compared to Ohio State's, Indiana played a killer schedule. Ohio State really had the biggest pass in the regular season of anybody. Their signature win was Texas. And you know what I think about Texas. Texas sucks. So that's been the theme of my whole year. But I don't know. 9.5 just seems like an awful lot at this level. You know, I know people are big Julian Sand fans, and he was highly recruited, and he's had a really good year. I just don't know how battle-tested he is. The one test against Indiana, I don't think they passed very spectacularly. They had the ball inside the 10 twice in the fourth quarter and came away with 0 points. Mm-hmm. You know, they missed a 22-yard field goal that would have tied the game, where I think Ryan Day, with if he had such superior personnel, should have gone for it on 4th-and-1 and tried to win the game. But anyway, I think that's another negative too. Looking at Ryan Day's pattern as a coach, Ohio State's, I think he's rather conservative by nature, and I don't know if that's really the best approach here. When you're playing inferior opponents and you don't want to give them opportunities to capitalize on your mistakes, that's a fine strategy. But, you know, we've been saying all throughout the season that Miami is clearly one of the 12 best teams. Personnel-wise, they're arguably in the top 3 or 4, and they've got to be surging with confidence off that win at Texas A&M. So I think 9.5 is just kind of extreme. And I'll tell you, some people may chastise me for this, but I would rather have Carson Beck at the controls than Julian Sain at this point. Carson Beck is far more battle tested, has been in the hostile arena for his entire career, played in big games. I like the quarterback matchup. And a lot of times I think we overthink college football. I think a lot of times whoever has the superior quarterback is the superior play.
Yeah, there's 8 teams in the playoff right now, and Carson Beck's played for 2 of them. So, I mean, the guy knows what he's doing, and he's obviously been there. Kai, normally when you look at a line like this and you're like, I don't want to play it, but then you really want to play it, you're the first person I think of, because I know you're a master of half times and team totals. You look at this game, and obviously at 9.5 is a big nut. I'm imagining you're looking at first half, second half, team total kind of thing.
Honestly, not really. I hate both of these teams. I just, when the line came out, I took it at 10, didn't buy it up either way. I went ahead and took Miami at 10 just because, you know, the only thing that scares me about that 10 is knowing how much Carson Beck is a front runner. And it worries me if they get behind by 8 or 9 points that he throws a pick 6 or something, because I think Ohio State is going to be the best team they've played, probably with the most talent and the most speed, especially at defensive back. And that's one of the things that gives me, you know, how big of a game is Caleb Downs going to have? You know, what can these guys do against them? Ryan Day calling the plays also kind of scares me for Ohio State. But, and I'm going to throw this off topic kind of topic thing. Who has had a bigger fall from grace? I mean, there's some, than Chip Kelly calling plays for the national championship team. Then he goes to Vegas. Now he's going to be the OC at Northwestern.
And don't forget what he did at UCLA too. Yeah, man, he was hot. Oregon. He was hot ticket, brother. I mean, he was hot ticket for a while. He was like,
what was the problem with the Raiders this year and Chip Kelly? He just never fit in.
I mean, if you read the reports from around the NFL, there are just people laughing at how basic his offense was in Appaloosa. I think he got a lot of credit for Ohio State last year, whereas if you listen now, it sounds like it was more Ryan Day that made them make changes than Chip Kelly. I honestly do kind of feel bad for Chip Kelly and a lot of these guys this happens to. I mean, he was like a pioneer, so innovative, had this spread offense, pace things no one ever does, and then it's just what happens in football. Everyone copies it, and then you have to go. You've worked your whole life on developing
you're nothing
like
special.
This, and then It's like, what's next? And what's next for him is he became just super vanilla, and you saw it with the Raiders this year. Low pace, short passing, doesn't disguise anything. The Raiders offense to me has looked a lot like Ohio State's offense in the regular season last year, which has all changed. So I didn't see he took the Northwestern job. I really liked Chip Kelly, my few interactions with him. Really good guy.
He is a nice guy. I've got a chance to be. He looks like an asshole, but he's super nice.
So I'm rooting for him. I just feel like I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there's guys like this every few years, and it's just like everyone picks off their good ideas, and you're left trying to change yourself, and it's just hard when the thing you worked so hard to get here it isn't really the direction the league's going anymore. You can't catch people off guard. So yeah, good luck to Chip Kelly.
He reminded me a little bit, not only in his thought process and how he ran his offenses, but stature too, of Mike Martz. Remember him with St. Louis, the Rams? He was just a great OC, was in front of the, was the fastest, game on turf, blah, 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 with the Rams, and just wasn't quite, despite the fact that he took him to a Super Bowl, wasn't head material. And he's just, I don't even know where the hell the guy's at anymore. So it's kind of interesting. Kip has stepped away for a second. I was going to ask him this next question, so I'm going to go to Case and start right there. The question's been asked me several times, and I know who Alabama fans, I know who they're going to choose, but who would you rather have at quarterback, Fernando Mendoza or Ty Simpson? Your dad brought up a very interesting stat, and I have not looked it up, but I'm assuming it's real. There he is. I'm going to ask Kip this stat. You brought up something really interesting. Who would you rather have, a quarterback, Ty Simpson or Fernando Mendoza? You brought up an interesting stat about how many touchdowns Fernando's actually thrown against winning teams and losing teams. What was that stat you had a couple days ago?
Yeah, 27 of his 33 touchdown passes were against the bottom feeders on the year. In the four games against teams that had a pulse, he only had six touchdowns in those games. So he kind of fattened up on the lesser opponents over the course of the season. And again, I don't know how startling those numbers are, but it just goes back to the point that, I think statistics, I keep saying the same thing, and I know I'm getting some derided for it, but I think in college football, it's not necessarily how you play, it's who you play. And I don't really buy into a lot of stats when you play a weak schedule, and I think their schedule was pretty weak.
In case we have seen this year in and year out, I don't know how often it's happened because it doesn't always happen that we have a Heisman Trophy winner playing in the playoffs. But we've seen Heisman Trophy guys fall flat on their face in some of the biggest games. That's why I always wish they'd do the Heisman Trophy after. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would love to see the Heisman Trophy after the playoffs if, in fact, one of those players is still there, because it is probably the biggest
game that matters.
It really is. What's your thoughts on Alabama, Indiana? I know you've been touting Indiana all year long. Your number's right around 7, and it hasn't moved.
Yeah, well, actually, we finally have gotten some movement. I mean, yeah, we've definitely seen the Heisman Trophy winners fall on their face. I mean, for the first question, I would hands down take Mendoza over Ty Simpson. Doesn't mean it's going to play out in one game. I also think, okay, well, even if you're making some knocks against him passing wise, which I would disagree with, but then mobility wise, I mean, Mendoza's in a different class than Ty Simpson. He gives you a whole nother dimension there. I think we got a comment last show. It's like, how do you get these numbers? I don't have these numbers available to me. Well, if you listen to me last show, I said Indiana -6 was just an insane number, and it made absolutely no sense. I made the number closer to 10. I said maybe I could be a little off, but there's no way it should be less than a touchdown. And it seems like in the last 24 hours, we have taken some money, at least in Vegas. We got a few 7.5s, the rest are 7. I really think this will close more like 7.5. So how you get the numbers, just listen to what I say originally before the game, because this was never going to close 7. I think anyone that dives in to the numbers and understands the market, knows that, I mean, Indiana has been a level above Alabama this year. Doesn't mean they're going to win, could go the other way, but I bet Indiana minus six. I thought I was going to be done with the Indiana thing. I said it after the Big Ten championship. It felt like the buy low was finally going to be over. I thought people would be like, okay, they beat the team that's been ranked number one all year, the defending national champions. I thought that would make the everyone realize like this team's for real, but it still seems like they're not getting that full amount of respect. I just really, really think they have to at least be a touchdown favorite over Alabama. Like, again, doesn't mean they're going to win. We've seen Heisman Trophy winners fall on their face, but over time, you got to realize that spot when the market opens a little short. So, I'd still lean Indiana. 7.5 is getting closer to where I think it should be, though. But if you can get the 7, I'm pretty sure this will close 7.5 or higher.
Kai, it's obviously good business whenever Alabama continues to play throughout the postseason. I know Indiana's schedule was not as bad as Ohio State's. It still garners, though, because when you're talking about playing lousy teams, they won by an average of 31 points a ball game. That is only second, I think, to USC. I'm trying to think of the team it was as far as a winning percentage or by the points they've won by in every single game in 13 games. I mean, they're blowing teams out every single week. They were playing lousy teams, but they were beating them up and down. And, of course, we live in Birmingham, we live in Alabama, and I'm sure everyone's licking their chops getting 7.5, aren't they?
Yes. Everything I've seen is on Alabama at 7.5. I mean, everybody. It's 30 people played the game, 30 bets on Alabama. And it's just the way it's going to go. But I'll tell you, I mean, I look at the strength of schedule, look at the two teams. I think the case is spot on, go figure, he usually is, that Mendoza, I mean, think about it, if they win in the NFL. I mean, who would go in the first round? Mendoza, and then the Tiesman would go somewhere in like round 7. I don't know, probably not that deep, but the quarterbacking differentiation's there. I do think that he looked better. The rest is going to help Simpson. I think, and I can't remember his name, of course, the defensive end for Indiana being out, I think is going to be huge to their defensive line. I think that hurts their pass rush and will give Simpson a little bit more time. So I as much as it would pain me, I think – I will not be shocked if Alabama wins the game and wins by a touchdown. I'll take the 7. I'll really take 7.5 with Alabama and kind of move on. And just think about that. When is the last time Alabama was a 7-point or more dog? 2008.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. That was Nick Saban's first year, right?
I have seen some debate this week about how much daily matters. I will say that's the big, if you like Alabama, I think it's got to be injuries based because Indiana, like I said last time, for the first time this year has some injuries. It does seem like it's probably better than last time we talked. Both those receivers are going to play, including their leading receiver, Hampton or whatever, and Elijah Surratt's fine. But daily, there's been a lot of debate of how much he matters. But man, to me, it seems like he matters a lot. He didn't come off the field once in the Big Ten championship game. Defensive linemen usually do not play every snap. I think he has second in the team in sacks. They've really been really good on the defensive line this year. So daily, losing him, that is a knock to me.
I think you're going to see, though, if Alabama wins this game, I think you're going to have one of two people as the MVP. Caleb Downs. That's Ohio State. Sorry.
Used to be Alabama.
Yeah. Sorry. I think him for Ohio State. But number 17, the wide receiver, is not Ryan Williams. I can't remember the
Jeremy Bernard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that kid is the one that can be the difference maker in this game.
Simply a little nugget to look at too. Alabama ranked number 2 in all of college football in forced fumbles this year. That's something that's, you know, one of those things you just kind of look at and you go, that's kind of interesting. If they can get a couple of fumbles from Indiana, I hate when games are decided by turnovers, but it is what it is. And normally the team with the more turnovers is going to lose that football game. Speaking of getting healthy, the Oregon Ducks are getting healthy at a good time. It seems like they're getting everyone back. They're 7-4 against the spread. They're giving up 2.5. Against arguably the best team in college football against the spread. I've got to ask you, they're 11-1 against the spread. No one's creeping up on Texas Tech. I love their defense. I love the way they play. When you're gambling, when you're playing a game, and I know you're not into, you're into putting your eyeballs in the game. You have numbers, you have stats, you have all kinds of things you put into your computer. But when you look at a team that's been that successful against the spread, does that play at all into who you pick, Case?
I guess I could say minimally. I mean, I think sometimes I'd definitely be guilty of citing it. Like, look, the market hasn't been able to catch up with this team all year. So I'd say a little. I mean, margin of victory to me is huge, and it's something I know we've debated on this show. I mean, I'll go to my grave and not saying that, you know, blowing out these teams that are overmatched is more predictive going forward than like winning close games against another good team. There's just so much randomness in these close games. So I'd say a little bit, and it's certainly if you're betting Texas Tech here, I think that's a case you make. Is, hey, the betting market all year has not known how good this team is. Every single week they come out, every single week they cover. My counter to that, and what makes me kind of lean the other side here, although this is the only point spread in the quarterfinals I have no bet on, but as I've dug deeper, I felt a little bit better about Oregon. I just wonder how good these Big 12 teams are. I mean, we talk about schedules and it matters who you play. Like, Texas Tech has beaten absolutely no one. I mean, even going back to the non-conference, I mean, Oregon was beating Montana State 28-0 in the first quarter. Montana State would be like a touchdown favorite against anyone Texas Tech played over the first month of the season. I just don't know. I think you got to put a little bit of do we know how good Texas Tech is? And maybe they are. Maybe they get out against these good teams and they just still blow them out. But, I mean, their two best wins are BYU, who was just in a grim struggle with Georgia Tech. I have real questions about Texas Tech's quality of competition. So that's the one thing that kind of holds me back from completely crowning them because of the margin of victory.
I'd agree with that. I think a lot of people are looking at the high flying offense against the shutdown defense. And it's really not that way. Texas Tech's defense is one of the best. Statistically speaking, they are the best in college football. Oregon's not that high flying duck team we saw 10, 15 years ago, but they can put some points up. I think it's going to be a really interesting feel me out kind of first quarter kind of, I don't see a high flying up and down, blah, 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 blah. But I will tell you something. I think when it comes down to championship football, it's a lot easier to look at defense and bet on defenses than it is offenses. Defenses are so more consistent just from the platforms and from the strategic aspect of how you play defense as opposed to offenses. If you get a high-flying offense, it's just gangbusters, been blowing everyone out all year long. It's really easy to make that offense look really lousy quick. It's not when you have a really good defense, Kip. I think it's going to be interesting. This to me is going to be the game of the season to watch until obviously the next round. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because it's really difficult to predict. Yeah. You know, Oregon has got tremendous athletes. I mean, look how they just ran past. They made James Madison look like a high school team. Yeah, I mean, the mismatch in the secondary was so profound. It was just stunning. The speed of the Oregon receivers against the JMU defensive backs, you know, like I said, it was like watching a donkey in the Kentucky Derby. And James Madison has been a very accomplished program, but they were just so outclassed. I don't think you're going to see that in this game because Texas Tech, you know, I don't know. I'm not as down on the Big 12 collectively. I don't think there's a lot of great teams, but I don't think there's a lot of really walkovers in that league. I mean, even games against teams like Baylor, and we saw Houston, you know, what's left of LSU. But I think there are better teams in the Big 12 from top to bottom than there are in the Big 10. I think the bottom of the Big 10 is just disgraceful. So I really don't know how to gauge that. You know, I harp on who you played and how you over how you played. But this game is really hard for me to pinpoint. I tend to think that Texas Tech has some of the intangible advantages. They're playing with a lot of swagger. They've got a lot of guys that they've assembled. They play great defense. You know, maybe Oregon's going to expose them, but I also am a little troubled by the fact that Oregon has to fly across three time zones and play an early kickoff, basically 8 o'clock on their biological clock. I don't know when they got to Miami, if they're already there, which if I was in charge of the Oregon program, I would have probably taken them there yesterday. To get a little bit acclimated, but I just find myself kind of leaning Texas Tech.
Kai, it does feel like the Texas Tech out of the eight teams left is probably the most disrespected program out of there. And again, against the spread 11-1, I mean, even Miami is getting respect. I mean, everyone's loving Miami. You got Ole Miss, who's there for the first time in forever, and they're obviously at the SEC, but Texas Tech still hasn't really garnered that respect that I think they probably deserve at this point.
I think when you look at the game, you've got to look at the speed factor. And that's the only thing that worries me for Texas Tech, especially their middle linebackers, who I just don't think have the speed that Oregon has, especially with allegedly all of their receivers are back.
Yep. Yeah, is Evan Stewart going to play? Because he hasn't played all year.
Yeah, I mean, so it just it that worries me. I wanted to hammer Texas Tech with 3 and 3.5. And I wrote, but I've been on them all year long. I Case mentioned it last time that, and I really started looking at the schedules of these two and the opponents and who they played and what happened. And I'm on the fence in this game. I've loved Texas Tech all year, and I have not been a big Oregon fan. I do not think Oregon's defense can stop Texas Tech. That's the biggest thing. If it becomes a shootout, I think Texas Tech wins, because I do think somehow, some way, J-Rod will make one play, and then the other guy with the one-handed interceptions also. I think those two, if they can stay on their feet and if they don't get blown by, can make some sort of play against Moore, because I do not think he's the most accurate passer, especially when they drop in coverage across the middle.
Yeah, it's great. Great breakdown. It would surprise the bejeebers out of me to see a shootout. I think it's a shootout. I think Oregon is going to, they figured something out defensively with Texas Tech. I think they're going to win the ball.
You have to say, even in the James Madison game, Tony, the Oregon defense, James Madison piled on some points the second half. Dan Lanning said we shouldn't even have come out of the locker room as we just mailed it in the second half. But even in the first half, James Madison consistently moved the ball. They got in inside the 10 and had two crippling penalties. They missed a field goal. They left about 13 points on the board in the first half. I was not impressed watching the Ducks defense the other day, and that might be that the weak link that we're not really identifying
I agree. It's narrative though, and I don't necessarily bet off this, but I do like kind of that they had that performance. I mean, we know Dan Lanning's a psychopath, and he said all week that was not up to our standards. We're going to get it fixed this time. I just feel like if you beat them 49-0, maybe you're a little bit lazier fixing it. So if I'm going to be Mr. Oregon, which again, I haven't even bet this, I kind of do like that they had that, and it's something that they can address.
That's a good point. Yeah,
certainly, it was concerning how well James Madison moved the ball. And not to get into another game, but I will say, I think it's been glossed over, was Tulane was moving the ball too against Ole Miss. They just couldn't finish any drives. They had pretty good numbers. So,
and that's another defense we know is not very good.
Yeah, both teams
straight into that game.
It's just interesting that I think both those teams obviously got blown out or competitive, but neither one were topless on offense.
Tulane was great between the 20s all year long. We've been there, done that. Ole Miss, Georgia. Here we go. 6.5 and 55.5 back on October 18th. We saw a 43-35 game where Georgia got the upper hand that game. That was one of those, what's up with Georgia's offense? But then again, it was Ole Miss. It was Lane Kiffin. It was like, okay, we know they can move the football, although several times this year they looked inept on offense. What do we expect this week with Ole Miss? Obviously, they don't have their head coach. Can they carry the flag? Can they continue to play really well without their coach leaving them, Kip, as we get ready for another Georgia game? I love when you play teams a second time because everyone thinks, well, they got them the first time, we get them the second time. I'm like, no, they've already played the game. We can already tell you what's going to happen. Georgia, 6.5, about right?
Well, I mean, you look at Ole Miss Tulane, 45-10 the first time, 41-10 the second time. You know, the games were right according to how they went the first time. I wouldn't be shocked to see this happen again, but I will say, anybody who has watched this season unfold, and we had this discussion on this show 6 or 7 weeks ago, Georgia was evolving throughout the year, and everybody kind of typecast them with what they did the first 3 or 4 weeks. Well, Georgia starts slow and they do this and that. The Ole Miss game, they didn't start slow. They scored all 8 possessions. They never punted the entire game. The only time they didn't score is when they took a knee to end the game. So Georgia's offense Hines completely owned the Ole Miss defense, converted third downs at will, went up and down the field. So I think that that's still intact, because I don't think the Ole Miss defense is a championship defense by any stretch of the imagination. On the other side of the ball, the Georgia defense has made gigantic strides forward. This was a defense that was getting no pressure on the quarterback earlier in the year. It's almost like something clicked for these linebackers about halfway through the season. I think the game I was at, the Auburn game earlier this season, Georgia was pretty abysmal in the first half. They got the call on the controversial non-touchdown that the SEC office upheld, or the replay center, and the second half was a different game. The Georgia defense completely, Auburn went up and down the field at will the first couple drives. Georgia completely stifled them, and from that point of the season, the Georgia defense has been locked down. They've been amazing. They're getting pressure. Their linebackers came to life. Their defensive backs, Ellis Robinson, the Tennessee game, I know Kyle remember this, they just tortured Ellis Robinson, who was the corner, who was a five-star recruit, red shirt, playing his first game. Tennessee made him look like a complete moron. He was getting interference calls and getting beat deep. This guy has evolved during the season, has become a force. I think he's got four interceptions in their last five or six games. The defense has come to a whole different level. So I know I'm a bit of a homer on this one, but I think Georgia on both sides of the ball are comparable offensively and superior vastly on defense. So I think Georgia wins in kind of easy fashion.
Yeah, Case, we really saw Georgia's best against Alabama in that SEC championship game. They really, really, I mean, they were hitting on all cylinders. And you're right, Kip. We've been kind of waiting for this Georgia defense to show up, if you will, sometime during the season. And they're showing up at a good time. And now they're playing Ole Miss. I don't know what the number is, but pardon me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Kirby Smart has ever lost when he's played a team a second time in the same season. Now, that may have not been a lot of times, Kai. I know that's not probably, you know, they haven't done it 22 or 23
And what do we
times.
Know about Lacy's health for Ole Miss? Because he's a big key to their offense.
My point is that when Kirby Smart has a chance to really look at some game film on a team, particularly since he's already played them, whether it be from year to year or week to week, he's really, really good at what he does. And I can't help but think that he's probably been up late with a cigar in his mouth, chomping on it at 3 o'clock in the morning, trying to figure out how, defensively speaking, they're going to shut down this Ole Miss offense, particularly since Lane Kiffin, who's an offensive-minded coach, is not going to be there. It should be an interesting case, though, too. And I know that we've talked about Lane Kiffin. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think he's got what he's got coming to him. I don't think he's as sporadic as some people think. But it should be interesting to see if Ole Miss will be willing to take any chances early in the game. And by that, I mean going for it on fourth downs, maybe any fake punts, any kind of thing, or will they just play within themselves? What do you think Ole Miss is going to be playing like against Georgia?
I'd be a little surprised if they do some of that stuff. I probably wish they would, but I feel like that's more of a Lane Kiffin hallmark. And I also think that, I think they got to be a little bit confident with how the first game with Georgia went. I went back and looked this week because I've already given this speech like three or four times, I think on this show and multiple different shows. But when these teams played in week nine or whatever it was, Georgia minus 6.5. I went back and looked at the exact number. Georgia minus 6.5 was one of my biggest bets that week. And I got to say, I came away feeling like I got away with one. I mean, they won by 8. They were trailing by double digits going into the fourth quarter. I said on the show last week that I thought 7 was just flat out wrong, and you had to bet Ole Miss plus 7. It's gone now. It's now mostly 6, 6.5, a little bit thinner there. Look, I've come around on Georgia. It was just 2 weeks ago. I said if you had to make a futures bet, I would take Georgia 6-1 to win the national championship. But I still think this is a pretty crazy swing of perception that, you know, Ole Miss took Georgia to the brink at home. Barely. I mean, like I said, I think we're lucky to cover. Now we're at a neutral field and the number is basically the same. I guess you can argue that Ole Miss should be docked a few points without their coach. And I was certainly in that camp last week, but I think they showed enough against Tulane where, to me, that's not a major concern right now. Lacy is playing. I saw he's healed well. Who knows? It could easily flip the other way if they get blown out and people say the opposite. But You know, I think getting Charlie Weiss Jr. back was huge. And then you saw clips from throughout the year where Kiffin was even saying, like, it's the littlest he'd ever been involved offensively as far as play calling and stuff, that it really was Charlie Weiss Jr.'s offense. I know Ole Miss is rallying around that. So I'm not really docking them any points without Lane Kiffin at this point, with all those factors in. And I expect Georgia to win, but I couldn't get this line anywhere. You know, I have like, my final number was 4. I started out more like the 5.5 range, but even then, you know, put them in the middle, that's like a 5. I just think it's a little high. I think this is going to be a close game. It was a close game the first time they played. If it gets back to 7, which I don't think it will, I really like Ole Miss at 7. I'd still lean that way at 6 or 6.5. It
guarantees us a team from the SEC, certainly in the Final Four. And when we do this show next time we do, it's going to be on Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning Central Time. We'll be back on the Coastal Digital Sports Network, working to get on Visa. And not to mention, of course, Tony Curry Radio. Thanks to thousands of folks who listen to the show live here on our YouTube channel, not to mention wherever you get your favorite podcast. We like to cover a lot of college football at the beginning and certainly the games of the day. Real quick, in case you're just tuning in here, Coastal Carolina, Louisiana Tech, Tennessee, Illinois, USC, TCU, those three games go around the horn. Those are the games we're betting on today. Kai, who do you like if you have to lean on those three teams or three sides or three totals? What do you like?
I want to say that I would bet Tennessee, but I'm not. I'm going to hopefully watch the game and enjoy it. Hopefully my Vols win. I think every single way you could bet the over in this game, you bet it. Just, you know, there. I don't know. The Coastal Louisiana Tech, I liked it at 7. I don't like it anywhere near 10. I don't like the game at all. USC and TCU, good grief. USC's, well, top 3 wide receivers aren't playing. Top tight ends not playing, 3 offensive line starters, 3 defensive line starters, their top linebacker, their top 2 safeties and top corner are not playing. Of course, TCU's missing Bryles, their offensive coordinator, which I think is huge. Hoover's out, Dwyer's out, missing D-line and safety, wouldn't touch the game, don't care anything about it. But honestly, if I bet that game, I would probably take under 56 for some reason.
Kip, how good is this week, man? It's the week between Christmas and New Year's. No one's working worth squat. We got college football all day long. Then, of course, right after New Year's Day, it's the weekend. I love these Thursday Christmases and these Thursdays, New Year days. It's just beautiful. It's like having 2 weeks off. It's great. What are you going to be doing, and what 3 teams are you going to be looking at today? What 3 teams do you like are sitting out to you? And then we're going to move on to some other great sports to make some money on. Anything while you're dozing in and out because you've been working hard all day, anything that particularly is going to be steeping your attitude today?
Well, I can promise you I am not going to be paying rabid attention to the Coastal and the Louisiana Tech game. I'm not very excited. Negative Nancy is not going to be tuned into that one. USC and TCU is intriguing. It's brand name teams. I think just the kind of blue blood attitude USC has, it's kind of beneath them to be playing in this game. I think TCU will be more energized as a team. And Case mentioned it before. I think it's really the most unappreciated factor in bowl games is who really wants to be there. And I can't see Lincoln Riley with his inflated opinion of himself and his program. Lincoln Riley continues. I mean, let's call it what it is. He's got a high winning percentage, but he never gets anything done. He never won a playoff game at Oklahoma. He never has a defense that can really stop anybody. Lincoln Riley's referendum is wide open for discussion right now, because I don't know how long USC is going to tolerate them being a 3-4 loss team every year. I just like incentive-wise, I think TCU is going to be more inspired to be there in that game. And I was high on Tennessee all year. I was still ranking them right at the cusp of my top 12 teams. I did not like what I saw in the Vanderbilt game. I thought they got thoroughly outplayed in Knoxville. They lost to Oklahoma in Knoxville, which I still am amazed by, because that's a game that I just really love Tennessee and went down the tubes on that one. So I don't really know what to think about Tennessee at this point of the season. So it's hard for me to come up with an opinion on the game. my gut reaction, Illinois was better earlier in the year than they finished. So I would lean Tennessee, but I'm going to watch that game because it's name brands. And I'm, you know, kind of a closet Tennessee fan because I like how they play, but I'm not really sure that they're going to come through for me.
Just a little nugget here. Coastal Carolina 9-2 over unders this year. Coastal Carolina gives them some points. They'll put some points up. And of course, La Tech's defense.
Did they even have a winning record, or are they a 5-7?
They're a 6-6 team, my friend.
Okay. They weren't competitive against the good teams they played, I know. Yeah, they played South Carolina the week after the Texas A&M debacle, and South Carolina just wiped them off the face of the earth. I mean, it was an awesome blowout.
Coastal Carolina.
Well, South Carolina was supposed to be a playoff team, remember?
Damn straight they were.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So was
somebody forgot to tell Shane Bowman.
So was Boise State. we're all off a little bit, aren't we? Case, the three games today. I want to make some cash. Who should I play today in these three games?
I mean, I pretty much agree with what all you guys are saying. This Louisiana Tech Coastal Carolina game is going to be terrible. I'd be pretty surprised if Louisiana Tech lost. That being said, I made it 9, which is where it was basically for weeks. Now we're moving. It's even a 10.5 in Vegas. I mean, if it gets to 10.5, I guess I'd have to say Coastal Carolina if you're just starved for action. But they have no coach. They did get a lot better as the season went on. I mean, to start the year, they looked like one of the worst teams in the nation. Louisiana Tech should win, but 10.5, I'm not playing it. If I had to make a bet at this point, I guess begrudgingly 10.5 would be Coastal Carolina. Again, Tennessee's the only bet I made today. I feel like they should win. I really like the matchup for them. I don't think this is a vintage Illinois team, despite they pulled off some upsets this year, but it was really about outscoring teams. It wasn't we finally saw the mill. It's just insane. They've produced so many NFL cornerbacks in the last 5 years. They've just had like one of the best secondaries in the nation. Seemed like that it finally ran dry in that department this year. I just don't think they can win a shootout with Tennessee. And I was hoping this got to 7. It never did, but I would actually lean TCU if I had to bet the last one. I mean, USC, Kai listed off. They just have so many guys not playing. I said it all year. I think what made USC special was those receivers, and all of them aren't playing. So I don't even know who Maiva is going to throw it to. It sucks. Hoover's not playing for TCU, and I wouldn't be rushing out to bet +5.5. It looks like it's not going to get to 7 now, but slightly into TCU betting wise in that game.
I can't imagine if Aaron Rodgers went into this season, which I think could be his last. He said he wants to ride out on top and he wants to play for a competitive team. And I told him, you can be 9-7. Playing for all the marbles the last week of the year. Would you take it? He would love to be in the situation he's in. They're catching 3.5 at home this weekend, 9-7 Steelers. And of course, it's always hard to go against Tomlin in any type of playoff scenario. One thing I was kind of looking at, my son actually brought it up, 213.5 over under on passing yards for Aaron Rodgers. Like, Dad, pop the over in that thing, because Aaron Rodgers is not going to lose his game, and he's going to make sure he's going to put the yards up to get it done. Baltimore all of a sudden looking fantastic, and I think it's because Lamar Jackson's finally getting healthy as well. Kip, what's your thoughts on this win-all game? It's going to be fantastic to watch. We'll also talk about the Panthers and the Bucks. Got a couple other games, but obviously they don't have nearly as much to play for, but what's your thoughts on the Steelers and Ravens?
Well, Huntley's playing well enough, and I assume that he's still going to be the guy in this game for them. I think it's going to be a really competitive game. I like the Ravens overall better than the Steelers in terms of personnel, but it's going to be a tough game for them to win on the road for Baltimore. But I kind of find it a toss up. I think the Ravens will end up winning the game, but we shall see. They rode Derrick Henry last week, which they'd kind of gotten away from. He had a couple bad turnovers and cost him some games earlier in the year. But the guy's still an absolute beast. What do you have, 246 yards last week in that game? Just was unstoppable. So it makes it easy on a quarterback if you just turn around and hand it to a raging bull like that. And if Derrick Henry shows up, I don't think the Steelers have much of a chance. So I'm going to go with the Ravens here.
One of the early plays I saw this morning, Kai, was over 29.5 rushing attempts for Derrick Henry, because they will be giving him the rock. What's your thoughts?
If it goes over 29 rushing attempts, then Baltimore wins.
Yeah.
Just period. I mean, that's it. I mean, I like Baltimore anyway. I don't think Aaron Rodgers has it. It's hard for me to bet against Pittsburgh at home. But, I don't really want to lay 3.5 if I can get 3 or under, or maybe a money line of 145, something like that, then I probably go with Baltimore, because I think, like you said, I think they're getting healthy. I think Huntley is okay, but I think you're going to see, and I don't think Pitt stops the run real well.
Yeah, Case, and I hate Pittsburgh. I'm a Bengals fan, and I've hated them forever. And I know how good they are, but man, it's hard to go against a Pittsburgh Steelers team catching points at home. I don't care who the hell they're playing or what they got, man. Whenever you get Pittsburgh, I would love to know the numbers on what their over unders or what their winning percentage is when they're catching points at home, because that is, everyone talks about Kansas City and talks about some of these great places to play. Pittsburgh, man. The old Three River Stadium, that place was just plain nasty. It's a tough town to play in.
Yeah, so I guess sorry to Santo, because I haven't done any work on this, but my snap reaction was actually just the opposite. When you said 213, I thought that was a little high.
Okay.
So my first reaction on that would be under. I feel like if Pittsburgh wins this game, it's going to be like 16-13, 13-10. Man, their offense did not look too dynamic passing-wise without DK Metcalf, who, of course, is going to be suspended again this game. I'm not saying Pittsburgh can't win. I'd be surprised if Rodgers, who he has done well, I'll give my hat off to him, but I still think his arm is kind of gone. I mean, he never throws downfield. I think it's going to be hard to pile up a lot of stats here. And I mean, he can still be great and throw for 175 yards and they win. I actually did bet Pittsburgh +3.5 -105 last night. I don't know if this is a bet I would make if it was a different time of the season. I actually thought Lamar was going to be back for this game. That was kind of the buzz on Sunday that he'd be okay for week 18. Then in a Harbaugh's presser yesterday, he said, to be determined, or the language he used kind of scared me. And if it's Tyler Huntley, even though he's been decent, I just don't think it should be over 3. But the really reason that pushed me over the top to make the bet is I just have a lot of Baltimore futures, including to win the division when they were kind of struggling. I have a lot of things for them in the playoffs, and I still think they have a chance in the playoffs if they get there. No one in the AFC stands out. Their defense is playing much better. So I'm just going to take a bath if Baltimore doesn't at least win the division. So part of the reason I bet that +3.5 was just to give myself a little bit of a buyback, a little bit of a hedge. So perfect scenario for me, Baltimore wins by like 1-3, which I do think is probably the most likely scenario.
What a roller coaster, too. No team's ever started the season 1-5 and made the playoffs. And I mean, that would be, for just from a disappointment standpoint, obviously, I hate it for the Cincinnati Bengals. But man, everyone, Baltimore was odds on all over the place to win everything. I mean, this was their year.
Remember the opening game at Buffalo, how bizarre that meltdown was. Yeah. They were in total control of that game and let it get away.
That's a great point. I totally forgot about that. Other game that obviously has a lot to play for, the Panthers and the Bucks. I like this game just because I'm a Mayfield fan. I'm happy to see Bryce finally kind of coming into his own. Used to go see Panthers games all the time when my ex-wife used to work over in Charlotte. It's a weird kind of stadium and there's no shade in that damn place. When it's hot everywhere, but anyway, Panthers Bucks, Case, what's your thoughts on that particular game right now? Bucks 2.5.
Well, I think this is probably the second time in 3 years or so, I just, especially after watching last night, just shame on the Falcons. There's just no doubt in my mind Atlanta has the best ridiculous in this division ever. I mean, they should win this division every other year, and that just the way some of the games they've lost, losing to the Jets have gotten blown out by everyone else. For like, I also had the Jets most losses, so I'm a little bit salty. If they don't blow that game, the Falcons probably win the division. And that's just one of many games they've completely blown. They've beaten the Rams, they've beaten the Bills. It's just ridiculous the Falcons can't win this division. I think they have
better players. Robinson might be the best player in the entire league.
Yeah, I just think Atlanta has by far the best personnel, and they're just so
I told you, Raheem Morris, I told you.
Yeah, cloaked in failure. I don't know. I know we kind of disagree on Carolina all year. I don't buy Carolina really at all. I think Canales has done a great job. Very good coach, in my opinion. Bryce Young, look at they're like the opposite Falcons. Look at the way they've won some of these games. They just won in some of the craziest fashions imaginable. I've been betting against the Buccaneers for weeks now. I think we probably talked about it on the show. I've certainly written about it. There's something dysfunctional there. That being said, I mean, now the spread 2.5, they were like a 3-point favorite at Carolina a few weeks ago. What Bryce Young have like 60 passing yards against the Seahawks last week. Tampa just somehow, they're the anti-Atlanta too. They just find a way to squeak it out every year. I kind of think this is a little bit short, so I would bet Tampa Bay here.
Your thoughts, Kai?
I'd probably go Tampa Bay also. Hey, okay. but don't forget, we've got 8 to 10 basketball games looking at today also.
Yeah, we do.
Real quick, I gotta throw this in. If the Falcons beat the Saints on Sunday, this game doesn't matter because the Panthers are the division champions. So this big showdown for the division is not actually being billed correctly.
You're correct, because the Falcons won last night. They threw that wrench in there. If they lose that game, they're up 21-0 last night. They almost blew it, and Stafford probably lost his MVP last night too. So. Yeah, I love the tiebreakers in the National Football League. And quite frankly, man, it's amazing. We're coming down to the last week and there's not more different types of strategies and ways to look at the playoff scenario. It's really cut and dry going into this final weekend. There's not a ton of stuff. All right, real quick. We're up against an hour here, Kai. We got lots of hoops. We got hockey. March Madness, by the way, is right around the corner. We're going to be all over that. I can't wait to turn our attention. That's the great thing about sports is right after college football, I'm going to have a bummer. I'm going to be down for about an hour, and then it's going to be right back after March Madness and college hoops. I can't wait. And of course, the NBA's handling it too. We got a couple of situations. I think it's LeBron James' birthday today, isn't it? And LeBron James. Cares.
Yeah, 41
years of age today. Yeah. The greatest basketball player to ever pick up a basketball. Fantastic.
I just lost respect for you.
Well, you lost respect. Michael, you never had respect for me. We can have that argument another time. Well, LeBron James is still playing, so he's still the most unbelievable basketball player I've ever seen. I mean, you can do that after the show. Don't do it on camera, please. Anything else you guys want to throw out there?
No, I'm just going to listen to you blow LeBron.
There you go. Greatest player of all time. K4wins.com, K4wins.com. Go to our website, check it out, and go to Las Vegas Sun. Is it LasVegasSun.com?
Correct.
LasVegasSun.com. Great article. And he picks every stinking game every single week, which is amazing. And what's your percentage this year so far picking games?
Down the stretch, I got extremely hot on college football, so I'm trying to call it up right now. I think I'm like 50 games over 500. I have right here 379, 335, and 16 picking every FBS game.
That's fantastic.
So
I love it.
Last year was the best year I ever had, but 44 games over 500 picking every single game.
That's $4,400 at $100 player. I like that, minus a little juice, obviously. So, all right, gentlemen, thank you much. Next time we talk, it'll be Final Four time. Friday morning, 10 o'clock, we'll be back on the Digital Sports Network, not to mention VSiN working to get on there, Tony Curry Radio. You can check us out on our YouTube channel, which is live, and also, of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available 24/7. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you. Go make some money.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.